You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Elliot Forrest, in for Leonard today. Some people were skeptical last October when 16-year-old Jessica Watson set sail from her native Australia with the hope of becoming the youngest sailor ever to circumvent the world nonstop alone. She received a hero's welcome in May when she returned from her 22,000-mile journey, but her triumph was somewhat overshadowed a month later when Abby Sutherland, a 16-year-old American girl, was also trying to sail solo around the world, had to be pulled from the ocean off the coast of Africa. Jessica defends her family's decision to support her ambitious adventure and discusses the extensive research and preparation she did in advance of her trip in her fascinating book, True Spirit. It's published by Atria. It's a pleasure to have you here, Jessica. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks. No problem.
It's so impressive to think you're 17 now.
Yeah.
And 16 at the time that you
I turned 17 3 days after I got home. So.
It's a little overwhelming for a lot of us to think what you had to do, what you had to prepare, and what you had to go through at such a young age. Did you think when you heard Abby Sutherland preparing for this other girl who didn't make it, did you view her as a competitor?
Not at all. You know, I don't think, you know, there's a few of us young solo sailors have completed circumnavigations, you know, in the last few years. And I don't think it says it like that at all. You know, it's just, you know, not at all competitive. For me, I know for me, it was definitely never about the record. It was just an excuse to get out there and do the voyage. You know, I never actually got an official bit of paper saying it's out around the world. And that does not worry me in the slightest. It was never about that for me.
Yeah, there was some official, the World Sailing Speed Record.
Yeah, controversy over that, just a bit more controversy.
But they're being very picky. And what was that, because you didn't go far enough above the equator, age?
It was an age thing. We knew before the voyage that the guys who do recognize sailing records wouldn't recognize my record because I was under 18. So we then chose the route that was slightly different to what they choose, but it is the same as what's been recognized in previous records. So, you know, Australia's Kay Cottee, again, the first woman to sail solo non-stop non-assisted around the world. I sailed the same route and what is basically recognized as sailing around the world as her. So,
you're good with it.
It's a bit of paper. I'm completely cool with it. It doesn't worry me.
And remind everybody the facts. You set sail. You didn't stop.
Yeah, so solo, non-stop, and unassisted around the world. Solo, you know, obviously pretty obvious by yourself. Non-stop, you know, you can't stop off anywhere. And obviously unassisted is basically you cannot accept any outside assistance, physical assistance. So you cannot be handed something on board or cannot take supplies on board at any point. So up to you.
And but the help you did have along the way, people could contact you.
It was amazing technology, satellite phone and satellite internet. So I was able to talk to my team back home, which was good and, you know, great and credible to talk through, you know, problems and that sort of thing as I went. And obviously, you know, had somebody giving me weather advice and that sort of thing along the way too. So, you know, that sort of support was pretty incredible to have that team behind you.
And how many days alone?
210. Got in Sydney Harbour, actually, to be told that before I got to the stage. Lost count. I was keeping a tally, but sort of lost a pen to keep tally with, and, you know.
Did you think it would be longer or shorter than 210 days?
We'd actually planned for pretty much 8 months, so it was just less than 8 months in the end. And that was our estimate, but, of course, we had to pack food and water and all sorts and plan for much longer than that, just in case it did take longer. So.
And how old were you when you first started to sail?
Started sailing at 8. Mum and Dad, we weren't an old sailing family, although Mum and Dad sent us along to the local sailing school with my brother and my sisters.
So you took classes?
Yeah, we took lessons and we sort of dragged Mum and Dad into it and then sort of got into sailing and boating as a family. So it's almost our kids who dragged Mum and Dad into it. And a lot of people find it really quite hard to believe, but I was probably the one I didn't much like it, didn't take to it all, you know, to start with at all. I was the girl who used to be too scared of everything and, you know, sailing out in the water. It wasn't my thing. So it was only much later that, you know, I actually started enjoying it when I learned more and got more confident.
Was there a turning point that you stopped being afraid of everything, as you say, and said, I'm going to sail around the world?
Yeah, look, there's a few things I suppose you could pin it down to. But, you know, like somewhere along the lines there, you know, between dreaming about sailing around the world and you know, getting this idea that I want to sail around the world and actually setting off, I sort of had to tell myself, look, if you're going to actually do this, you know, if you're going to get serious about sailing around the world, you're going to have to toughen up a bit and, you know, and get on with this. So, yeah.
And that idea, when did that come to you? How old were you when you...
When I first sort of thought about, you know, the first idea of sailing around the world, I was 11 and Mum read me, we're going to blame Mum. Mum read me Jesse Martin's book about his solo voyage around the world. Jesse Martin was an Australian sailor, solo sailor, who sailed around the world a few years ago. And this book just kind of clicked with me because Jesse was this ordinary young guy and he'd done this absolutely incredible thing. And it sort of said, well, you know, you're just an ordinary person, you know, And I kept thinking, you know, wow, what would you be like in that situation? How could you handle this? You know, is this something you can do? And obviously wanted to have a go, wanted to see. So went from there.
When did it go from being a thought in your head to actually expressing it out loud to say, oh, your parents and others?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's maybe a year later, probably a little bit more than that. I first talked about my sister. You know, it's just one of those discussions you have with your sister, nothing new really. And then, of course, I brought it up with my parents. So we're having this quite serious family discussion. And my sister kept dropping hints all through this. You know, you got to tell them. And she kept, wanting me to explain what I was on about. So in the end, I did have to explain. And tears and all, I told them what I wanted to do, you know, quite seriously. This is what it's about. And so they sort of said, yeah, you know, whatever. But obviously I don't think they thought, you know, they thought I'd move on to something else. They didn't think I'd stick at this idea. So, you know, it was a month later or a couple of months later that Mum saw how serious I was about this. She sort of threw her full support behind it. And it was only later again that Dad threw his full support in when you know, I had quite a bit of support and really proved myself to be quite serious about it.
I have a daughter who's only just a little bit older than you are. Mm. And I completely understand that Mom was easier to convince than Dad. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
What did your father say?
You know, he said, you know, I think he says, you know, it would have been much worse to crush her dream, to tell her she couldn't do this. But, you know, I think for him, it was a matter of making sure everything was perfect with the boat. You know, he wanted to do everything he could to do his part to make sure everything was perfect.
Your parents were dragged through a lot of controversy, probably still are, for allowing you to do that. Do you, what's your reaction
to
that?
There was a ton of controversy, a lot of criticism to begin with. Now back in Australia, there's nothing. You know, the whole country, somewhere along the lines while I was at it, say that they just got behind it and it was absolutely incredible. Like by the time I got back, it really did feel like the whole of Australia was behind us, which is an incredible feeling. But yes, there was that criticism. There was all of that to begin with. And you can understand it perfectly because it's a big, scary and a dangerous thing to be doing. And, you know, people worried for me and that's great. But I think it's because people didn't take the time to find out more what it was about, you know, the reason why Mum and Dad said, you know, let me go. And I suppose I'm really hoping that that was what comes across in the book because nobody actually knows that part of the story about the preparation, about my experience. So, you know, that's a big part of the book and I'm hoping that this is finally a chance to tell that part of the story.
Elliot Forrest here for Leonard Lope talking to Jessica Watson. Her book is True Spirit, the true story of a 16-year-old who sailed solo, nonstop and unassisted around the world. Well, then talk to us a little bit about that preparation. How long was it and what did you do?
Yeah, you know, since started talking about it out loud, you know, first steps, you picture yourself as a 13-year-old girl, you're telling the world you want to sail solo, nonstop, unassisted around it. That's just great, but nobody's going to take you seriously. You know, the hardest part of the whole thing is just getting the project moving. You know, how do you make this happen? How do you get the support?
And money.
And the experience, yeah, and money you need. The experience was the first step for me, you know, I had to get the experience. So just getting a place as crew on yachts as a 14-year-old girl is extremely difficult. You know, what skipper is going to choose you over a fully grown guy? So, you know, eventually I did get a few breaks there, started getting experience. Through that, you start meeting people who, you know, pledge their support. And then you start, you know, smaller sponsors. And incredibly, in the end, another Australian adventure, Don McIntyre, stepped forward and offered me the boat to use, which was an incredible start. And of course, after that, a whole lot of ton of work had to go into that boat to get it ready. And we had just this amazing volunteer support team who put just this incredible amount of work into getting it perfect.
How many people volunteered to help you?
Look, you know, some days in the shed we'd have, you know, 10 people or more just working full-time in the shed to get it ready, you know, in and out, and all sorts of people. You know, I think you'll see it in the book, the acknowledgements page is more like a chapter. There was so many people involved with this project, you know, someone who helped out organising the food or someone who just lent a few bolts or somebody came in and did sanding for a couple of hours or somebody who built a shelf. You know, there's so many people involved with this and it was quite incredible to share it with so many people.
And the sponsors, if you go on your webpage, you've got a lot of sponsors. You know, I think it's very exciting. I just imagine at the beginning when you're trying to convince them, I mean, because it worked out well, you did it, you're safe. But going into that, trying to convince them.
Same again. It seems crazy. You know, how do you convince a sponsor to support something like this? Well, when you get your chance to convince someone, that's the perk. Because I think, you know, like we never have a journalist that actually came and met us, not did a phone interview that wrote you know, a controversial story. Like, sure, there was a ton of, you know, criticism out there, but not from anyone who had actually taken the time to find out a bit of background. Because, you know, they didn't know the story, it seems crazy. So when you got a chance to tell your sponsors about the safety measures, about the, you know, my experience, then they understood it just as we did.
Let's talk a little bit about the boat. What was it called?
So Ella's Pink Lady.
Where did the title come from?
Not really any sort of inspirational story. Ella was obviously our major sponsor, Ella Bache. And Pink Lady, well, we actually had a naming competition, a local community. And about 10 minutes before we had to announce the name, I was sat down and said, Jessica, you have to pick a name. So we came up with Pink Lady. So that's the story behind the name.
And how big a boat?
34 foot, so just over 10 metres. Not a big boat, but a boat that's just really well known for being extremely tough. So it was more important to be tough than a big boat. So,
and how is it outfitted?
Quite simply, surprisingly. I did have the incredible technology. I had the satellite communications equipment, that sort of thing. But when it came down to it, the most important thing is that boat was nice and simple because, whereas I can fix bits and pieces, but I couldn't fix if something breaks. It's hugely technical. I wouldn't be able to fix it. So obviously, the important thing was to keep everything simple.
And I've seen pictures from the outside, but I assume you were living underneath somewhere?
Yeah, no, obviously downstairs I've got my bunk and got the head, the dunny, the bathroom. you got the little galley, the kitchen, and you got your navigation station, sort of your desk where you keep all your instruments, that sort of thing, and your storage areas, for food, water, fuel, that sort of thing. So yeah, it's just, not big, but, just enough room for me.
And I guess a lot of storage. Tell us the kind of foods that you packed for your trip.
Well, nonstop, unassisted. Everything I took had to be with me on the boat. I only caught the one fish, a bit embarrassing.
You caught one fish.
One fish, yeah.
What was that day like?
That was quite an incredible day. It was exciting. It's really quite embarrassing. I only caught one fish.
But you tried to catch
more.
I
did try quite hard, but one fish. Anyway.
Great sailor, terrible fisherman.
Pretty much. Never claimed to be a good fisherman. So all the food had to come with us. And Mum did an incredible job with the help of quite a few people and some nutritionists just planning out, meal plans. So it's sort of a mixture of long life food, cans, a little bit of freeze-dried, make my own bread, powdered eggs, all of that sort of thing.
You made your own bread?
Yeah.
While you were traveling?
Yeah.
You had like an oven?
No. It's amazing what you can do. You're just making cupcakes in a pot or a pressure cooker, just with a lid on. Not quite the same, I have to admit, but it is incredible what you can do, with not a lot. So I actually like to think, a mixture of everything and, of course, a lot of chocolate and a lot of sweets, you can actually eat quite well. It's obviously nothing beats fresh food, but
yeah, you have
I'd
a
like
list
to think that it's not too bad.
You have a list in here. How many candy bars did you go through?
Quite a few.
300-something?
Oh, I have to admit, some of those actually came back. I didn't get through all the chocolates.
That's a lot of chocolate to take. You're fond of the boat's self-steering system, you named it.
Yeah, so obviously, you can't be steering or sailing the boat 24/7. So we have a system called a wind vane that does that for you. And it's sort of a mechanical system, hangs off the back of the boat. And, this is what steering the boat basically looks after you while you're sleeping. And it had a name, it had a nickname, we call it Parker. Parker, I'm not sure if you have it or you've seen it over here with the old TV series Thunderbirds. And in that, there's a lady, Penelope, who drives a pink Rolls Royce, and her chauffeur is called Parker. So that's where the name comes from.
And so how much time would you spend up top and how much time would you spend down below?
Look, it completely depended. Obviously, when you are down south, you try and spend, it's cold down there, it's miserable, so you try and spend as little time possible on deck. You've got to get your jobs done on deck, though. So out in the tropics, you basically live on deck, and then, of course, you've got, it's the same thing. I think sometimes you had weeks on end where you were busy, it was tiring, it was hard work, and then you had times when the boat basically sailed itself, and there was very little to do, just keeping up with maintenance, and I never got bored, bits and pieces, keeping in touch with home, that sort of thing. So you had your busy times, you had your quiet times.
You sailed out on a trial at one point and came face to face with what?
Yeah, 63,000-ton bulk carrier, so a little scraper there. Look, this was a sea trial, first night of a sea trial down to Sydney. You might have heard about it. I think it's one of those stories that got way across the world and pretty much the worst thing that could have happened right before I left, in the way of critics, basically you're just doing exactly the wrong thing there. But it's pretty much simply one of those things that shouldn't have happened. It did, and I suppose we learned an absolute incredible amount from it. Looking back, it's actually probably a great thing to have happened because not only did we learn so much from it and improve the systems, but, it was also probably a great confidence thing. Get the worst thing that can happen out of the way before you leave.
You experienced several what you call knockdowns in which the boat actually turns completely upside down. Is that right?
Yeah.
The sail is actually now underwater.
Yeah. So
does it right itself at some point?
Yeah. Boat self-righting. It'll come back up. The wave will knock you down 90 or 180 degrees over, and then it will self-right. So all it's left.
How long does that take to get right back up again?
Hard to tell. Your concept of time kind of does funny things at that point. But like it's just, you know, left for you to do just to sit there, hang on, wait for it to come back up. You know, it's only a matter of seconds, but it seems a lot longer.
A listener on our show page, and I want to know too, how you dealt with the loneliness of being alone for 210 days at sea.
Yeah, look, you know, from the moment I sailed out, I missed everyone, and there was times, you know, there were really tough times. I was incredibly homesick, but I don't actually use the word lonely. Lonely is for a Friday night, you're sitting there at home, nobody's asked you out. It's different when you're out there by yourself, by choice, and you've got friends, family, and thousands of people thinking of you and waiting for you back home. It's quite different.
What was the worst day?
I don't know. It was, you know, there were the moments, there were the tough times, but I don't know if I can pin it down to, you know, what was the worst day.
I mean, I imagine, was there a day where the wind was howling and the waves were really high, or was it all smooth sailing?
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily make a bad day. You know, there were, you can have a lot of fun surfing down big waves, but, you know, there were very tough times. You know, you have those moments, you know, even just when there is no wind, actually, and that can be just as frustrating or worse, to be rolling around going nowhere. Incredibly, incredibly frustrating. Or there is the storm, you know, that time we were knocked down four times in the Atlantic Ocean, and that night was a pretty bad one. And there's times, you know, when you get the bad forecast, that was always a bad time for me, because you know there's a storm coming, you don't know how bad it's going to be, and it kind of, yeah.
People can go online on your website once again and or on YouTube, and they can see the homecoming that you had as you pulled back into the harbor. How many other boats were around you?
Yeah, I think there was over 1,000 boats around. I think they're out in the water that day, well over 1,000. I think there was estimates between 75,000-100,000 people on the harbour, on Sydney Harbour. So it was an absolutely overwhelming welcome home. It's really quite incredible. You know, I'd just gone from seeing nothing for so long to thousands of people. It's just too much to take in.
And as you pulled in, what was the first thing you did when you got on land?
Well, I think it would have been a hug from mum and dad. So, you know, it was pretty wobbly that day, you know, getting my land legs again. No, everyone was determined they weren't going to let me go. So, and I think it's probably a good thing I would have fallen straight on my face.
Well, you've written this lovely book and the adventure, obviously, of a lifetime at 16. What are the next big adventures for you?
Well, like a bit of everything. You know, the book has been an adventure in itself. I've had a lot of fun, you know, writing it. It's been great. Doing a lot of traveling at the moment, which is something I'm really excited about, because you know, I've just sailed around the world, but I haven't actually seen a lot of it, so that's really great. I'm finishing school, learning to drive, you know, bits and pieces, see where sailing takes me, learn to sail a bit faster, and you know, long list of adventures and other sailing to do.
I wish you the best at whatever you do. You seem to have a lot of grit and determination, and I think you're impressive to everyone you talk to.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for being here. I've been speaking with Jessica Watson. Her book is called True Spirit, the true story of a 16-year-old Australian who sailed solo, nonstop, and unassisted around the world, and it's published by Atria. Jessica, thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you very much. Ha 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 ha.